Advisory Committee Dog and Pony Show, Madam Chairman.
Which, did you want to go first, Senator?
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 37 came as a result of an Emergency Employment Act funded study that was promulgated by the Advisory Committee to the State Land Board of all of the estuaries along Oregon's coast. At the termination of the Advisory Committee work, there was one report on each one of the estuaries, and I have an example of each one of these reports for the committee files. And for the benefit of discussion, I would like to pass these out and have enough for everyone on the committee to look at one anyway, and give you the reasoning and the idea behind Senate Bill 37. The inventory quickly provided us with information in regards to the status of the fills in the estuary. As an example, I have before me the Yaquina Bay report, which lists the fills in that estuary. We find that there were 53.4 acres of filled lands.
Let me just clarify. Senator Meeker has the only one on.
Yes, I don't have
the one. These are all just different ones. Huh?
It's just to give you the idea of how it was done.
Each report summarizes the amount of filled lands in the estuary. And as an example, in the Yaquina Bay report, which in my report appears on page 4, and I'm sure each report has a summary of the fills in that particular estuary, but in Yaquina Bay there is 4.12 acres of landfill on submerged and submersible lands. And that's it in Newport, between the Coast Guard Station and Bay Boulevard. And it goes on to list all of the other fills. There was a total of approximately 54 acres of filled land on submerged and submersible lands. It was the opinion of the Advisory Committee after research on this matter that the filled lands could not, the filled lands on submerged state lands could not be sold. So there was a question as to what we would do with those filled lands, since technically the lands belong to the state but might be occupied by a private individual. So Senate Bill 37 is the outcome of that finding. Senate Bill 37 requires the Division of State Lands to lease or to reserve for public use or to initiate civil proceedings to remove the new lands created prior to May 23rd, 1963, which is the date of the enactment of the Filled Lands Law. Now, that, in essence, is the reason for the bill.
Senator Meeker, could you encapsulize the Attorney General's opinion for Senator Hoyt, who wasn't here? The opinion of Senator Hoyt is in your folder.
In 25 seconds, Senator Brown. Well, Senator Hoyt, I can't put the Attorney General's opinion in legal language since I have passed an accredited law school and have not passed the bar. But nevertheless, in the kind of language that I understand, the Attorney General's opinion indicates that the state does have the power to lease its the beds and banks of its navigable waterways, and that those monies accrue to the common school fund. They can cannot, the state does not have the power, however, to lease a wharf prior to, what is the date? 1968.
In the original opinion, they use the same cutoff date. That's kind of out now.
At any rate, the state does have the power to lease its land, obtain monies which accrue to the common school fund. Senate Bill 37 instructs the Division of State Lands to lease these filled lands that we discovered in our inventory of the estuary. Is that capsulized enough, Senator Brown?
Mr. Hogg, I believe you had some.
Yes, I'll just run down the bill briefly as it is here. Section 2 of the bill simply says that the division shall, with respect to these unapproved fills upon state-owned land, require a lease or initiate proceedings to protect the interests of the state. Now, subsequently, certain amendments have been proposed, and if I might just run through them for you, I have them written out here. In line 7, the date is May 23rd in the bill. That's a typographical error. The correct date is May 28th. In line 9, we're adding references to the Astoria quitclaim bill because many of the state's submerged submersible lands were conveyed by law under that. In effect, what we've said here to the division is that unless some law has allowed you to convey the lands or transfer an interest in the lands or reserve an interest, these unapproved fills will be taken care of in the following manner. So we're trying to exclude everything that might have been done according to law.
You want to give us that number?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. The reference would be after the 274-930, and you would insert or 273-850 TO 273-890. Some other, you have to strike the or and insert a comma that's before the 930. In paragraph A of subsection 1 of section 2, the bill currently says require an annual lease. That has been will be changed through the proposed amendments to say that it will require a lease for such term as the division considers necessary. So it may be a 5-year lease, but will still require an annual payment of a lease fee with the wording that's already there. Subsection B, or paragraph B, now says that the division, in lieu of leasing it, will initiate civil proceedings for abatement in the manner provided, as you can see by the ORS cited, in the manner provided for the abatement of a public nuisance under the fill and removal permit law. Now what we're doing is changing that under the proposed amendments to say, rather than trying to get the thing abated, the division shall treat the unapproved fill as a trespass against the state and take whatever actions necessary under its general trespass prosecution statutes. That, in essence, is the are the proposed amendments to the bill.
You have those in writing now? Or
I have them in writing, but I'll have them typed up and submit them to you on Monday, if that's all right.
Mr. Edwards?
I think it's been adequately covered, Madam Chairman.
Are there questions? There are no questions, then for your convenience, we'll turn to Senate Bill 39.
Madam Chairman, I will attempt to cover the reasons again behind the Advisory Committee's adoption of the proposal before you. As you recall, during the 1971 session of the legislature, the Division of State Lands was given the power to issue fill and removal permits. Water Resources Board has the power to revoke those permits under that law. After operating under the law for some time, testimony was brought to the advisor committee that this was somewhat cumbersome and oftentimes a difficult method of enforcing the fill and removal law. The Division of State Lands, after issuing the permit, really had no power to enforce the provisions of that issuance. And that is the resulting reasons that Senate Bill 39 is before you. It would change the 1971 law and give the power to the Division of State Lands to revoke the fill and removal permit. That basically is the reason for it, and I think Mr. Hawes can go into the technicalities of the law.
Mr. Hawes, would you first just give a capitalized statement of what the fill and removal laws are?
Oh, yes. Fill and removal law is a law enacted, I believe, in 1967, providing, originally in 1967, for removals, providing an environmental resource protection permit system. At that time, anyone making a removal of a certain quantity of material from any water of the state was required to get a permit. Now, this is not a function directly under the State Land Board. It's under the State Water Resources Board. The division under the statute is not acting as the arm of the State Land Board, but merely as a state agency carrying out the day-to-day functions for the Water Resources Board. So this is not the usual State Land Board Division of State Lands relationship. In the last session, it was amended to include fills using materials in any waters of the state. So it now requires a fill permit or a removal permit for, in essence, anything that may disturb the waters of the state, both navigable rivers and non-navigable bodies of water. It is essentially a resource protection statute.
Madam Chairman, I need to be straightened out here. You started in 1967, and you got to go back a lot further than that to help me out. As I understand it, that these people came to the Act, the Resources Board, to protect game and fish life and that type of thing.
That's correct.
And there was a coordinating agency where the fish and game people, everybody had to say okay before something could happen. You didn't say anything about those things. Now,
no, that's right. It's the same one.
Those changes, there have been no changes then, is that correct?
No.
But what is the change?
All right. All we're doing here is saying that the division, acting as the arm of the State Water Resources Board, not only does the division have the power to issue the permit, but it has the power to revoke the permit if they're in violation and the power to enforce compliance with the terms of the permit. So they can go into court and say, stop what you're doing, you don't have a permit, or you're violating the permit, and they don't have to wait for the Water Resources Board to do it for them.
Where does the Game Commission and other interested parties come into this picture?
They come into the picture when the permit application has been received two ways. Formally, they come in when the permit application has been received by the director.
Director
of the Division of State Lands. The permit is circulated, the application is circulated to several named state agencies, including Game, Fish, and several others, for their comments on whether or not this particular permit would affect gravel spawning beds.
Is the land board doing all the things now under this bill that the Water Resources Board used to do?
No. I'm sorry. The only thing being retained for the Water Resources Board in this bill is the appeal from the director's findings, either granting a permit or denying a permit or revoking a permit. So if they
Representative Peck has an announcement. Happy belated birthday, dear. Bless you.
I was been thinking about you.
Oh, I hadn't left here. Finally, for you. Well, you didn't have TV. I did. I was on Channel 2 early and at 9:30, and I said I want to take time to wish Senator Hoyt a happy birthday.
I saw you in the house when I was
Well, yeah.
Thank you.
God bless you. Many happy returns.
Don't forget, we're going to
I hope your 75th birthday is going to be as happy as mine.
I hope I'm here to tell you on the other
And I hope I'm here to eat some of your cake and tell us.
Don't forget the story. Thanks, Grace.
Thank you.
Gotta get cool with shit.
Thanks for interrupting that meeting for me.
You were saying, Mr. Hodgson?
Merely saying that the only thing left in the Water Resources Board under this permit system is the appeal, the initial administrative appeal from the director's order or finding or action.
Director of the Land Board?
Director of the Division of State Lands, yes.
So they're the appeal authority now, where before they were the housekeeping authority?
They were the enforcement and appellate authority.
So that there haven't been any real changes except in who does what?
Under this bill, that's correct.
Thank you very much.
Do you want to run through the bill itself?
Okay. Subsection 1, or Section 1, I just added the definition of division so I didn't have to spell it out every time I mentioned it. The numbers referred to up here in line 6 are the numbers of the removal and fill permit system. Section 2 is the initial enforcement power under this system, and it's been changed from the State Water Resources Board to the director of the Division of State Lands. You notice here he can investigate, hold hearings, issue orders, do whatever he thinks is necessary to force compliance with the law. Section 3, again, is the revocation power. It's one of the primary enforcement tools. Again, it's changed from the State Water Resources Board to the director, and the change at the end was considered by the committee to clarify the old wording. It used to say, may revoke it only upon notification and conference with the permittee. Well, the committee decided that conference really meant hearing. That's the way it's being handled. So it's been amended to say notice and hearings.
What line is that on?
Line 31 and 32 on page 3.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Section 4 is the power that used to be in the State Water Resources Board to go in and get a restraining order and stop, in effect, any unauthorized fill or removal operation going on. This, again, has been transferred from the State Water Resources Board to the Director of the Division of State Lands. That essentially is the bill.
Mr. Edwards?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I think one of the things that hasn't been emphasized is why do we seek the change? This bill has been before the committee in concept for 4 years. Previous session, it was Senate Bill 28 that died in the committee. The testimony that the committee received indicated that up until 1971, there virtually was no enforcement. There were some 43 fills in violation of the law. Also, the second reason I think that governed the advocacy of this bill related to the fact that in no other state agency do we find a separate state agency given the enforcement. The Department of Agriculture, if you have a dirty slaughterhouse, they go out and do something about it. Public utilities, if you're doing things wrong with your truck overloading, they can do something about it. They use the state police as their arm, but they do the primary things. This would simply concentrate the enforcement as one of the responsibilities of the division. Then there's another unique thing that the committee took note of. We have a land board that consists of 3 constitutionally elected officers. Yet we've given the enforcement to just one of those 3 officers. There's even I've heard lawyers argue that there's a constitutional question under the way the law is today. Admittedly, after 71, the Water Resources Board did increase their staff and did make a rather aggressive approach to the bill of violation problem. But prior to that time, and the committee prior to that time, had in its files a letter which said we are neither staff-oriented nor programmed to enforce this particular set of laws. And in fact, nothing was done.
Mr. Edwards, you must not have been listening this morning. Senator Smith gave a very able remonstrance that the bills don't die in committee. It must have been tabled.
Well, I'll defer to Senator Smith as to whatever term and what he wants to use. The bill did not emerge from the committee, Senator. My apologies to Senator Smith.
That's terrible. I'm still having a problem. Cecil, where does it say in here the State Land Board, or Division, whatever it is, has any more power now under this bill than the Resources Board had before?
Well, this would transfer the enforcement from the Water Resources Board to the Land Board.
Yeah, but why would? What makes you think they do any better job? That's the logic I'm missing.
I mean, to the Division.
Yes.
Well, the testimony we received is the Water Resources Board did a very poor job. And in 71, in middle 71, they commenced an enforcement program. But there was just no enforcement at all. Many times, that by the time anybody would get around to, well, there's a case on the Applegate where a reported violation was going on. By the time they got up there, it had been discontinued for 2 weeks. It just wasn't a close-knit, efficient kind of operation. And why should it be separated? Why should one, the question that normally suggests itself, why should one board or commission take over the enforcement of another?
Well, I think Senator Wright would ask you why you felt it should be that way.
Well, I suppose it's my response. I shouldn't have asked the question, but it relates to it.
If I understand this, Madam Chairman, the appeal goes to the State Water Resources Board. That's on page 3, lines 14 and 15. But from what they said, the enforcement lies with the Land Board, or whatever you call it. And is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, what I don't understand is what rightly have to think that one state agency is going to do any better job than another unless something is added. And what's been added?
Senator Baker.
Well, Senator Brown, Senator Hoyt-Beek. The committee heard considerable amount of testimony on this particular issue because we were quite concerned that the Division of State Lands, after issuing a permit for a filler removal, if they discover through the Fish Commission or the Game Commission or someone like that the issuance of that permit was the conditions under which that permit was issued were being violated, that they couldn't do anything about it. They then would have to communicate with the Water Resources Board, and the Water Resources Board then began the procedures to either cancel the permit or do something of that nature. Because of the mechanics of issuing the permit, being established that the Fish Commission, the Game Commission, the Department of Environmental Quality all made statements as to the advisability of issuing the permit, because those procedures were well established, we could see no logical reason not to allow the issuing authority, in this case being the Division of State Lands, to be the same individual to cancel the permit in case there was a violation of those conditions. Then the individual who had the permit canceled would have the right to appeal, but not to the same authority that canceled the permit, but to another authority, an unbiased authority, if you will, in the Water Resources Board. It just seemed like a logical extension of an ordinary legal process. The police officer makes the arrest and you're tried in court. Under the current law, the Water Resources Board would cancel a permit and you appeal to that board. I don't think there's any attempt to hide anything here at all.
I understand that part. No, that's great. Now, why is something going to happen any better, more quickly or more promptly under the new bill than under the present law? And they're going to have a hearing, and the guy can keep on muddying up the water or stealing the fish or the gravel, can't he? Until
well,
the hearing's over.
Madam Chairman, perhaps Mr. Cox could give us
Well, one of the factors do any of the three of you have the information on what the staff of the water board is?
One person.
Mr. Cox?
I'm Susan Meyer, Senator Brown, and I'm from the staff of the board, and I'm...
Well, we'll wait here for you later. Yeah, we can hear you.
Madam Chairman?
Mr. Edwards?
I think that what this really does is just remove a layer and permit a direct action kind of thing, instead of going through an added agency. Instances were brought to our attention where bills and things were going on that were not receiving any attention from the Water Resources Board. The LC, for example, there was a tremendous bill up there, which actually was discovered by EEA personnel of our committee and reported and had to go in a pretty roundabout channel.
Other questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Chairman, will Senator Maker or some of these people be here later for questioning?
We're going to have one more hearing of all the land board bills, is that right?
Yes.
And then I assume that you would be available for our work session. Is that satisfying?
Madam Chairman, if I may, I'd like to ask Cecil, which may be a facetious question, a question on Senate Bill 37.
Mm-hmm.
I just read an AOI proposal here, and, which will come later. But it recalls a question that Senator Cook and the others on this committee are familiar with. The city of Astoria, one third of it is built on Bill land. What do you do with the city of Astoria under Senate Bill 37?
Madam Chairman, I think the response to that would be that the previous quit claim, so-called Astoria bill that was passed, which provided for the filing of quit claims and some 68% of the parcels of land have been quit claimed through that process, covers it.
All right, then to continue, there are similar types of construction on down the coastline. Have they all been quit claimed?
They have not.
What do you do with the situation which might be similar to a situation like Astoria?
Madam Chairman, the situation in Astoria that did receive the attention of the previous legislature, the 69 legislature, was considered unique in that the state itself was a participant in much of the filling after the catastrophic fire. That kind of a situation does not prevail with the other areas. Also, in taking note of the fact that that Newport, Reedsport, Wallport, a great many as you mentioned, are built on state-owned land, the committee with the federal EEA funds initiated an inventory, copies of it are on the desk here now, that has pinpointed that land. Then I think each one can be settled on its own merits. This committee at the previous session, introduced a bill similar to the Astoria bill that would have extended those provisions generally to these other like situations. The bill, can't use that word, can I? Did not emerge from the committee.
It emerged.
And the reasons advanced were, well, how much land is involved? How much was it worth? How was it filled? Why was it filled? If it was filled in navigational servitude, there's some exemptions. If it was filled by a port commission, there's some exemptions. So we did assemble all of this information as a basis for upon which administrative and legal decisions can be made.
Senator Baker?
I was just going to comment that there are several examples that can be pointed out as procedures used here, defining exactly the size and extent of each one of the fills. And Senate Bill 37 gives the advisor, the Division of State Lands, the procedures to make those people legal, even though they're on submerged state-owned lands. We think it's an attempt to handle in a different manner the situation that was handled at Astoria for all the other, quote, illegal, unquote, occupation of land.
Senator Ivers, did you have something? Any other questions? Thank you. Mr. Cox, did you wish to testify on Senate Bill 37?
It's just in the matter of support, Madam Chairman, that's with
right.
The amendment.
You approve the bill in its present form?
No, well, with the amendments as
suggested. With the amendments as suggested. And are you advised of the land board's position?
As was indicated to you yesterday, I understand that the land board is in, the two members of the land board are in favor of 37 as revised. The treasurer has asked that he speak separately on some of these issues, so I cannot speak.
Fine.
Would
he
care to comment on
39
at all?
Well, I want to get through 37 first. Mr. Angstrom, your testimony on 39.
Yes, I have testimony both on 37 and 39.
Would you like to come up on 37?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I have a short statement and I've incorporated within the same statement AOI's thoughts on Senate Bills 37 and 38. Maybe after I finish comments on 37, would it be permissible just to summarize our position on 39?
Yes, I think so.
All right, thank you. Senate Bill 37 requires the Division of State Lands to lease, reserve for public use, or initiate civil proceedings to remove landfills created prior to May 23, 1963. If filling was done without state approval on state-owned submerged and submersible lands. The concept expressed in Senate Bill 37 causes our association concern. The intent of the legislation may be commendable. I think Senator Meeker indicated that it was to make illegal and other fills legal. We feel, however, that it can create some problems that will be extremely difficult to resolve. For example, Harbor Drive in Portland was created by filling of state lands. In all likelihood, this was done without state approval. How would this type problem be resolved? Another situation which could arise would be where a fill was constructed in the early 1900s, and since that time has changed hands many times. Such situations will be very difficult to resolve, and we doubt if they're in the best interest of the state. Another fact that complicates this matter is that the state encouraged filling until recent years. We understand that even during this period, the state did not normally have a procedure to approve landfills. Now that's the end of my testimony on Senate Bill 37. And I think I can summarize 39 by saying that we have no objection to it.
Well, let's see if there are any questions at 37. Anyone have a question? Mr. Angstrom. Senator Smith.
Well, question at Newport, for instance, fill land there. You heard Senator Meeker say that there's a question about whether or not there's a question about title of the land. So I assume that you're saying that you don't like Senate Bill 37 because this forces the issue of the question if the state land board need to lease the land or they must approve title. Is that the problem?
Well, no. We feel that these areas should be resolved in the land ownership. What we're saying is that there's problems. Let's go back and take a hypothetical case, say like around 1920 or 30 places, and someone wanted to, the state had generally sold its tidelands to mean low tide. And the purpose for this was for development, because at this time, a lot of Oregon's economy was tied to commerce around the waterways, and so they encouraged this type of development. They didn't really have the environmental values that we have today in mind. Okay, so the applicant or the person desiring to do this had first state intent, and then the second thing, probably in some discussions would talk with the Corps, and they may have talked with the state. Sometimes they did not. But filling was done under these pretenses. In other words, many of these things, we're not trying to justify, you know, deliberate illegal acts. But there is the problem that a lot of these things were done on good faith. And some of them, even the history, could not be chased back down. And it's hard to resolve these.
Well, you're right. And that's, of course, you know, those, there are many of us here have been studying this thing a long, long time.
That's right.
And it's very difficult, I agree. But are you saying you're opposed to Senate Bill 37?
That's a, I think the way it, that it's written, we have to look at the amendments now that have been proposed. But as it's written now, we would be opposed to it as it's written. Although the concept of making these fields legal and resolving those, when we feel that this is a desirable approach.
Well, then you will have some. Do you have some recommendations that this bill might be amended so you can then approve it?
Well, we've discussed alternates. I mean, not alternates as such, amendments to this, but approaches that might be acceptable. And you create problems, if you recall, like the Astoria quick claim deed, for example. These lands down there were filled with some state approval, but many of them would come under the same instances here. And in these instances, at Astoria, you've given the people of the land a title, free here. Under this concept, people of identical situations could find themselves in a position of paying something beyond their means. Let me just give an example. What if these properties have been purchased by an older couple and they're living on them, and they're living on welfare? Well, they probably can't afford to pay a lease. They've entered into it in good thing, and they can't afford to pay for the property. And there's one other thing too. Your question, this really bothers us, as you can see. It really does. But many of these fills may well have been created in the maintenance and navigation channels too. And so what we're really saying is that without really understanding and knowing the history or the background of these things and what the intent, it's almost difficult to come out with a fair solution. Almost impossible.
Have you looked at the identification of fill lands that were prepared by the Indian Plan?
I have these books, and I have not analyzed them. I know that they address themselves to the fills and where they're located and where, in the best estimation of these staffs, that they feel that the...
Would you take a look at those? And maybe it might become apparent if there are any little old ladies in tennis shoes living on some of these fills.
Okay, I can't think of any on Newport, but you can think of, Senator Smith, my background was with the Fish Commission. I spent 10 years with them, and I was quite involved in these, and I think these reports are really excellent, because these problems have to be resolved. Some of the fills, I think that they're directed to, without looking at the report, some were mentioned at Newport, right in the town there. Without looking in detail, it could be involve some of the shops that are located on the center. You have the Coast Guard there, the Marine Science Center, or at least part of it could well have been state lands, and the Sunset Terminals.
which is farther up bay by Sally's Bend, is there's two fills there. One was done in way back, I don't know when, and the other one was done in about 65 or 66, with state approval, right adjacent to it. But again, we always come to the question, what constitutes state approval? But anyway, the point I was trying to make on this one, this mill that operates there, I don't know the background and how it was purchased, but it operates very marginally. And a lease or a purchase could seriously upset them. And one thing I haven't pointed out is that we have concerns, but this really doesn't affect AOI members. As such, I don't know of any that are involved.
Mr. Angstrom, you said that AOI was opposed to the bill as it stands now. Is that your position also if the amendments suggested by Mr. Hawes were adopted?
Madam Chairman, I really have to look at these. I have some notes here. And I would like to a chance to talk with Senator Meeker to make sure that I have them right and then talk with some of our people.
Sure.
I would say that our position is not one real strong in one way or another, except that we want to point out to the committee problems that could be encountered.
Other questions? And you wanted to refer to Senate Bill 39?
Yes. And I can summarize that very simply. We feel that it's a good procedure and that we have no objection to the changes that are being made to the law.
Any questions? Thank you.
Before the gentleman leaves, Madam Chairman, I would like to go back to 37 just a minute. I think we all are hung up on this thing. Somehow or other, I think you've got an added responsibility in the sense that since you're involved in this and you're taking the time to study it and testify, it's really you ought to be giving us some suggested alternatives. I really think that's your responsibility, and I look to you for that.
Well, Senator, I appreciate your comments there. We've had one alternate that we had thought, but I have not had a chance to clear this with the committees, but one thing that we have explored is something to look at these fills. Because remember now, this goes clear back to statehood, this law. One thought that we did have in mind, and we've not prepared the amendment, but would be to sell these lands, maybe similar to some of the other concepts based on the appraisal of the submerged and submersible lands prior to filling. This would be consistent with another act that is being committed. Or maybe to sell these lands to these people for administrative cost type approach and maybe a token fee, something that would not be unreasonable place and unreasonable hardship on.
Under the bill as it's now drafted, do you read it as providing any place for an appeal person involved to go to court to see if the facts are correct?
I believe that they would have this
under the Administrative Procedure Act or under some other procedure.
Yes, or just through the court procedures.
You don't consider that as being adequate protection for any injustice that might accrue in some isolated case?
Yes, in the sense you're right. I mean, yes, it can provide adequate protection. But it does cost an awful lot of money. And if we can resolve these type problems fairly and equitably here, this is really what we should be trying to do.
Would there be any other way besides going to court? For instance, in the tax court, we have a set of steps that you can take where if you're broke, you can still have a say, but someone's going to listen. Would there be some procedure that could be delineated along that line that would keep from robbing somebody that's breaking them by going to court? Still
got
a chance to say the piece.
I'm sure that there are procedures. We have a lot of confidence in Mr. Cox, basically on these type things. And if he had some direction, he can have the administrative latitude. Fair approaches can be developed.
Senator,
I think, as I recall, and you could correct me. One of the suggestions or one of the discussions was that kind of along with what you said, Dick, was to create maybe a special court that would deal with all this question of title on these land, so as to avoid them going into court in various places and coming up with different opinions, was to create a special court just like we did for the tax court that would handle all the questions of title on this. Or is that, this was something we had in mind.
That was considered by the advisory committee, but they adopted the administrative procedure route, and then from there on to the Court of Appeals.
But it was considered. Of course, it's still available for to go that way.
This approach, considering the magnitude of problems all along, all in Oregon, both navigable waters and lakes, may have some room there.
Other questions? Thank you, Mr. Engie. Mr. Cox? Will you direct your remarks to Senate Bill 37, first, please? Well, you already have 39.
If there are some questions on Senate Bill 37, I'd be pleased to.
Are there? 39.
Madam Chairman, I'm William S. Cox, Director of Division of State Lands. The division very much supports the concept of Senate Bill 39 to essentially change the enforcement powers from the Water Resources Board to the Division of State Lands. Perhaps I might tailor this testimony to answer some of the questions that have been asked when the bill was being presented. At the present time, the Division of State Lands and its staff, in cooperation with the various state resource agencies, Fish and Game Department, Soil and Water, depending on other resource agencies, depending upon the project within the waterway, puts together factual information and determines whether or not a permit for a given project in a waterway, either removal or a fill, should be issued, and if it should be issued, under what conditions it should be issued. I might say that almost, 98-97% of the permits that we turn out concerning our waterways all have specialized conditions in them. We're very much concerned with the environment, and the staff takes a extensive effort to determine that any project is so conditioned that it will not violate the environment, the portion of the environment that we feel it should receive maximum protection. At that point, then after the permit is issued, under the present law, the Division of State Lands has nothing further to do. The disadvantages of the present system lies in the fact that the Division of State Lands staff have been the ones, in cooperation with the other agencies, to put the permit together, to write the conditions and write them to meet specific needs. If some of these conditions are reported as being violated by the people in the field from the Fish and Game Departments, then the Water Resources Board staff is at an immediate disadvantage because they have not had the background or the knowledge that the division staff had in putting the permit together in the first place and why the conditions were placed in the permit. So it takes a considerable time to get them rebriefed, to get them completely aware of the enforcement problem and why we're asking that the condition be enforced. And then, on top of that, to have them implement the enforcement procedures that are appropriate. It was the feeling of the advisory committee, as well as the division staff, at the request of the division staff, that this be changed so that the Division of Lands is responsible for the enforcement, is responsible for backing up and standing behind the conditions that they do put in these permits, and that the Water Resources Board then be in the position of being the appeal body, looking over what has been done, determining that what has been done is proper according to the intent of the law. And the division very definitely feels it would be beneficial to make this particular change, allow the division to enforce the permit and its various conditions. and it would make a smoother operation of the law.
Questions?
If the Game Commission, for instance, or private citizen were to complain about some turbidity in the water or whatever, and it was one of your licensees, they would come to you then, wouldn't they?
Yes.
I see. Now, having come to you, you would evaluate as your regular procedures as to the validity of the complaint, and then you could issue an order for the cease and desist, or you have to go then to the Water Resources Board with your information.
Under the present law or under
the proposed law?
On the proposed law, we would then be able to issue the order for cease and desist after making the evaluation. Under the present law, we turn the complaint itself over to the Water Resources Board and they determine the validity.
Now, in the enforcement of this, what authority do you have, having verified a complaint to the point where you say it ought to stop? What can you do to make it stop?
There are two avenues existing under the law. One is a criminal procedure for a misdemeanor. The second is a civil procedure in abatement. And also coupled with this, a procedure to revoke the permit or conditions. So we have both a criminal opportunity and a civil opportunity as a practical matter. The criminal opportunity depends upon the ability of any state agency, was the Division of Water Resources Board, to go to the local district attorney and to get him to swear out a complaint and cite the individual into court. The abatement civil proceeding is the better way to go. If someone makes an illegal landfill, and then he should be forced to take it out if it is indeed illegal, and so this is a civil proceeding, and this is the one that has been attempted to be used most of the time. Our chances of getting before a district attorney who has many other problems to worry about in the criminal law field is hasn't been too successful.
Madam Chairman.
Senator Schmidt.
Would this give you the authority to override the Rogue River Coordination Board?
No, the Rogue River Coordination Board, most of their problems are with the Department of Environmental Quality. And all this law specifically states is that the individual must meet the established environmental quality standards for material in the stream or turbidity in the stream of this. And we don't really enforce the bill under that category at all. So we wouldn't have overriding power.
Senator Ivers.
I do have one sort of misgiving, and that's that any person who doesn't like the decision of the Division of State Lands can appeal to the Water Resources Board, and they can overrule anything you decide on. So it just seems to present the opportunity of just one more place to go first, and that everyone who doesn't like what you're doing is going to automatically appeal to the Water Resources Board instead of going directly to the courts from there. It just seems to add one more step there to postpone the final determination.
That's pretty much of in a sense, a decision of the people who put together the law to add what they felt was a protection to private individuals. And we leave to kind of people around this table to determine what's best in the policy standpoint.
Well, that's one of the doubts I have about that step in the proceedings.
Other questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. This leads me to the final question on this thing. As Senator Ivers has alluded to it, under our air and water quality permits, we now, I think, the authority to make them stop right now. And then they can adjudicate later. Now, as I see this, a man can complete his work and get out of the country before he really has to nail it to the cross, because he appeals to the Water Resources people, and then he goes to the court or through the Administrative Procedures Act. By that time, he's got the bridge to build or whatever. Now, what's your answer to that, please?
You are voicing a concept and a concern with the law that I have myself, Senator. And and so does Tucson Meyer, the Water Resources Board. We have a problem with getting immediate enforcement through the method that the bill is set up now and the various hearings and procedures. It's very difficult to go into a court, and the attorneys on this committee can perhaps amplify this better, to get an injunction, especially concerning an industry. A court will be very reluctant to issue a preliminary injunction to stop an industry from doing something until they've given the industry a chance to be heard. Therefore, it's difficult to get someone to immediately stop. Now, we're talking on the exception rather than the rule. Most people, when they're notified that they've violated the law, will stop. The damage is done, but they will stop. But there are exceptions who do not, and to get the matter stopped, it depends really upon the attitude of the particular court, or whether he'll issue an injunction against a given industry for an immediate stop. And then you go through all the process from there. And I might also add that, for an example, if the court is aware that there's a hearing process within the state administrative procedures, they will not take action generally until they determine what position the state has in regard to the violation or whether or not there should have been a permit issued. And then they will take action after that point. So there is some problems in enforcement which we well recognize.
Madam Chairman, this general question. Really, what is the difference between what we're talking about here and talking about air and water quality control? It's outside of ownership, but I'm talking now about the damages.
Well, the DEQ laws are, you might say, broad enough to encompass what we're talking about here. But this law specifically zeroes in on the total resource of a waterway. The fish life, the gravel spawning beds, the bank protections that are necessary to maintain animal life, as well as other environmental benefits and protections. The DEQ law speaks to the water quality pollution, but you have to have some pollution before they can step in and do something. This law is intended to be there first and say that before you can be caught polluting something, that you should check, get a permit, and we'll tell you how to do it if it's a job that's necessary to be done to avoid endangering the environment or to avoid the damage happening in the first place.
Madam Chairman, I understand that, but we're talking really now about the violation, about the one of the million man who doesn't do what he's supposed to do.
And the either avenue could reach him. Sometimes it's difficult to, after the fact, prove that a stream was polluted or that there were turbidity in the stream. And we can come at him through the fact that he didn't get a permit in the first place and that he ought to take the material out that he's put in. This reaches this aspect of it, where the mere pollution or the turbidity statutes and quality control statutes do not.
Senator Brown, members of the committee, I'm Tucson Myers, a member of the staff of the State Water Resources Board. On December 19th, the board voted to support enactment of what was LC 208 and is now Senate Bill 39. We feel that consolidation of the administrative and enforcement function, now divided between the Division of State Lands and the board, would benefit both the people of the state of Oregon and the state agency. The board, State Water Resources Board, now serves as both the appellate body from actions of the Division of State Lands in processing permit applications and as the enforcement agency once a permit has been issued. Now, although the board separates these functions through internal divisions within its own staff, transfer of the enforcement responsibilities to the Division of State Lands will help maintain our objectivity in matters of appeal. enactment of this legislation should result also in an increased administrative efficiency. It would also result in a permittee dealing with only one agency over the life of the permit under normal circumstances. And dealing with one agency should eliminate some public confusion on the roles of each agency. Finally, the board, since its inception in 1955, has been a water use planning, programming, and a quasi-judicial body with the responsibility to establish and maintain a state water use policy. Under Senate Bill 39, the board is relieved of the day-to-day administrative responsibilities of enforcing the law, but retains the broad functions compatible with its policy responsibilities and with its position in other statutes, such as the appeals body from orders of the Fish and Game Commissions concerning fish passage and hearing referrals from the state engineer. We have received excellent cooperation from personnel of the Fish and Game Commission and from Division of State Lands and from the State Police in our enforcement endeavors to date. I have included in this written statement, which you have a copy of, I believe, some suggestions for some house cleaning or housekeeping measures, which we would present to you for your review. For example, the present wording in a section of the statute allows appeals from our actions to go directly to the circuit court. We'd like to have that change to go to the Court of Appeals, so it's in conformance with the Administrative Procedures Act.
Where is this in your written testimony?
That's on page 2, item 2, change in ORS 541-625. And there are some references to subsections, which, as the law was written in 1967, it dealt only with removal. When it was amended to deal with fills in 1971, there were sections added, and some of those cross-references weren't changed. So as a consequence there, they don't really make sense if you delve into them, if you adhere directly to the statute right now.
Questions for Mr. Myers? Thank you, Mr. Myers.
Board, this one? No, sir.
Mr. Russo?
Madam Chairman, committee members, I'm Raleigh Russo, representing the Oregon State Game Commission. One point of information I would like to make, Senate Bill 224, which is the act that we're discussing today, ORS 541, when drafted by the Fish and Game Commission for the last session, was drafted to read that the enforcement powers lie or lay with the Division of State Lands. Apparently, the bill came out in such a manner that that was not a clear issue, and after its enactment, it was the Attorney General's opinion, that gave the enforcement powers to the Water Board. But I wanted to bring this point out, that it was the intent of the Fish and Game Commissions who drafted that bill to have the enforcement powers within the division. Our agency has been very involved in this act since its enactment. We believe that the law can be more efficiently and effectively administered with enforcement powers placed under the Division of State Lands. In addition, the fewer administrative agencies and staff people actually involved in the coordination of the law, the more consistent enforcement we think will be. For these reasons, we favor SB 39.
Questions?
I'd like to know his views about the matter of emergency enforcement. Where a person can drag their feet to have their job done and everybody's scot free.
This has been a problem, Senator. Our field people up and through this morning have initiated about 47 violation reports concerning the act. And many of these are after the fact, or if the person refuses to stop action on a verbal request by our field man, there's very little we can do in a short period of time. It was a very cumbersome procedure at the moment.
Any better under the new bill?
We think that the new bill will more effectively get to the enforcement aspects of the act. I do not think it will probably make a difference of immediate action. Immediate action is not addressed to SB 39. I'm not sure what the solution is to that, quite frankly.
One final question. How critical, in your view of your department, how critical is this matter of immediate action?
Well, here again, of course, it depends on where we are and what kind of damage is occurring. Overall, if we look at the last 2 years that we have experienced under the bill, the majority, by far, the highest percentage of the involvement with the act has been a very cooperative attitude of the landowners. We have, on occasion, maybe half a dozen, probably less than a dozen occasions throughout the last 2 years, run into the type that were unwilling to cooperate. And I think that where we really measure the success of any legislation is the people's willingness to abide by it. And we've been trying to be cooperative with these people. We're not sure, of course, when someone is a bad actor, what kind of influence that has on the other people in the community who are trying to live under the legislation. Now, there is that type of thing. You know, if you let one get away with it, it makes it more difficult to deal with the other person who is more willing to cooperate.
Your people are really not concerned about this, very, very seriously, about the immediate person. Is that fair, Steve?
I wouldn't say we're not concerned with it. I would not say that's a major emphasis of the program.
Senator Iverson.
Well, I guess I was just thinking, going back to that, what I raised before, but if they don't think this is the biggest problem of getting immediate compliance, but by adding this extra step there, it just seems postpone the day when you can get compliant. And I know in my own county, we've been faced with gravel operations or moving around banks to protect some homes higher up on the Clackamas or some of the tributaries where they have changed channels, and by the time you go through all the steps, it's an accomplished fact. And this just seems to me to add one more place to stall things along.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Russo. Mr. Cox, do you have injunctive powers, civil injunctive powers now to move on a violation?
Madam Chairman, we do not. Any type of violation is in the hands of the Water Resources Board. Any action this time. So
if these powers were transferred to you, these enforcement powers, would you feel that you needed civil injunctive powers?
I would think it would be maybe one step or appropriately used to move in and stop something, yes. But I believe that the opportunity is still under the law to get a civil injunction. If I'm interpreting your question to me correctly, that we have the opportunity to go after a civil injunction.
You do have.
We do have. It's in the law.
Myers, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I sense still some confusion with the
if you're going to
process.
Come up.
The present law provides the authority to the board to enforce the law through either criminal proceedings, civil abatement proceedings, or through a board hearing process. What this Senate Bill 39 proposes to do is transfer the authority to go through the criminal or civil abatement proceedings directly to the Division of State Land, so that there is no additional delay proposed. If a violation is found, for example, we don't have to have a Water Resources Board hearing before action can be taken.
Senator,
I just ask a question, though. But if the board says you're violating and you stop right away, he has the right to appeal to the Water Resources Board, doesn't he, under this bill?
Well,
the court isn't going to give any issue an injunction as long as there's still a procedure for him to go through on appeal.
Right. So we could go, for example, criminal.
Well, the first notice of hearing on page 3, line 30, is in the director.
What line did you say?
Line 30, page 3.
That may be true, but looking at what it says up on 13, 14, and 15, why, I don't know, it's an inconsistency then. It says any person agree may appeal to the state water resource board, and the board may modify any action taken. So just as soon as they rule against him in any manner, he says, I appeal.
Mr. Dewinner, would you do some work on these two sections? Number one, see if on page 3, lines 13 are inconsistent with what's on line 30, and would you confer with Mr. Cox and see whether he would care to submit any amendments on further enforcement powers that he needs?
Senator Iverson. Page 2-3, pardon me, line 34, it says, in lieu of penal enforcement proceedings, proceedings to abate may be instituted at law or equity in the name of the state of Oregon upon relation of the director of the Division of State Lands. Under that wording, as it now stands, reading the board, we have initiated civil abatement proceedings without a board hearing.
Yes, but this law, this changes it. This gives him one more step if this is enacted.
Well, but I said, well, all right.
Lines 13 and 14 are not penal procedures. They're provided for in the Act as a first step, and you're right.
That's my opinion. I don't know. I think it should be looked into anyhow.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Judge Branchfield, did you want to say anything? Is there anybody here from the Treasurer's Office? Mr. Cannon, did you wish to say anything?
Senator Hoyt. Kessler.
Yes, sir.
We asked the question, does anybody feel the need of some spot enforcement? And the Game Commission said they were trying to use the soft touch and they didn't really think this was a top priority. Would you concede with that?
Madam Chairman, Senator Hoyt, I feel that there is. I would like to see the committee investigate the placing into this law the powers that DEQ has to secure performance of their permit. And I have seriously questioned whether or not we should keep the Water Resources Board in here, and why not just go directly to the courts? And then I have a further concern, which I will express to the committee since I have an opportunity, and that is I'm not an attorney, but I have often thought that subjecting the Division of State Lands action, which is an arm of the State Land Board, which is a constitutionally created board, to review by another state agency, which is only statutorily, raises a serious constitutional question. And I was going to suggest this to your legal counsel, just as something that seems to me that should be looked into.
Well, I should volunteer that information.
Well, my mind's on something else, Senator. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. If there's no other witnesses on these bills, then the hearing on the bills is closed. I have a couple matters I'd like to discuss with the committee. While Mr. DeWinner is working on drafting amendments, is it the feeling of the committee, A, that you would want to see some kind of further powers given to the department or to the division for enforcement? Would you like to see an amendment in that direction?
Shall I get the responses from some people to that?
Well, I don't know, Madam Chairman. I'd like to investigate it, I think, of course, this came from an interim committee with a great deal of study, and I assumed if there was some background and reason this thing was introduced the way it was. If that's not true, then an alternative, I think, would certainly be reasonable. But
the reason it goes to the gravel people.
They're the worst violator.
If you feel you'd like to see an amendment where it went directly to the courts, we could have one drafted that way.
Let's take a look at it. And when you say that, Madam Chairman, does that mean you're talking about the same type of procedures that Great Water Quality Control now have?
Is that what you want?
Well, after all, they do have the power to go into court today and stop you before morning. And I was in the committee that had that bill, and I thought it was needed. Now, like we're talking about the same subject, but only in a maybe less critical area.
Okay. We have Senate Bill 80 before us now, and I don't think we can do the regular business of the committee and get through Senate Bill 82. The suggestion I was going to make to you was that we meet on Monday and Wednesday at 4 o'clock on Senate Bill 80. The only alternative I can see is coming back at night, and I don't think we're going to come back at night more than I do. And I know you
get double time after 6 or 5 or something.
So. But I think elections would. Senator Burbidge said he would try to see that he could be here. There are about 17 articles, I think, in Senate Bill 80. Don K. Leff said that there were 6 or 7 of them that were controversial, and three that were really controversial. So I think we'll find it in good order and be able to get through it fast, except for those couple sessions. Will you think about that suggestion and let me know on Monday?
Could I ask one question?
Sure.
You know, I think it's Senate Bill 26 or whatever, and you probably got the same letters from newspaper people about not having an opportunity. Will they have an opportunity at some date?
Yeah, right.
Come in?
We set up another hearing.
Good.
Okay. Thank you.
See, I'm sure glad to be on a committee.
See, Bob, the reason why Scott wasn't added to the committee until late.